Part 18, Chapter 4. The flatbed rumbled and jarred through the soaking wet night. The ground drive of these things was supposed to keep them floating 1 to 3 feet off the ground. But when the ground varied 8 to 10 feet from level every few feet, the effect was far from floating. It was bone-jarring. The teleportation-type drive sought to automatically adjust itself to the sensed ground distance. It corrected and recorrected, and the result was a whining, racing, dying, racing combination of rumbles and screeches that hurt the ears. No wheeled vehicle could have traveled this road at all. So gullied and rock-strewn a highway was fit only for wandering beasts, if that. The ore trucks that had traversed it for hundreds of years had worsened it, rather than otherwise, as they blew off the humus, the only thing that protected it from the gutting of the rain. Johnny was trying to get some sleep. He was dead tired. His left arm ached from constant use of the cane. His palm was calloused now, but even it had rubbed raw. 4 days of floundering through this forest, 4 days of constant sweating from the heat, 4 days of walking with a cane, and 4 nights full of insects had taken their toll. If he wanted to fight a battle with any degree of success, he had better get some sleep. The seat was, of course, huge, but it was not very cushioned. And when there weren't bumps and jolts, there were stops, like right now. He opened his eyes to look through the windscreen. The rumps of elephants, tails twitching in the headlights, bedewed with rain. They were strolling along, used to these trucks and owning the road for themselves. Cyclo trucks had no car horns, but they had bull horns, and the Russian driver was using one now. He was telling those elephants to get off the road. He was repeating some word that sounded like Sukinsin, and Johnny divined it did not mean elephant. He went back to sleep, bullhorn and all. The next time he opened his eyes, a leopard was blocking the way. It had killed a mouse deer and was using the road for a dinner table. Johnny took it that the leopard did not like its meals interrupted. The fangs and glaring green orbs of the eyes indicated it was ready to take on any number of trucks. The bullhorn was going again. Somewhere they had changed drivers and the Scot was at the controls. The leopard heard the Scot battle cry and leaped straight up and off the road and was gone. They passed over the dead mouse deer, once more on their way. A flatbed could do 80 on the flat. It was straining now to get 8. No wonder it took days to get from the branch compound to the main mine site. Testimony that cyclos didn't do it any faster lay in the little round-domed roadside houses that occurred every few miles. Johnny had stopped at the first one they came to. It was ideal for ambush, and even though he didn't think the cyclos would leave anybody behind, one should know what lay ahead. But it was just a dome, big enough for 4 or 5 cyclos to stretch out and rest, or wait for a repair truck, or have lunch. It was bare, a shelter that kept out wild animals and rain, nothing more. There was no sign of the other flatbed and its crew, so they were still following the convoy up ahead. Toward morning, Johnny woke to find the truck stopped. The lights were on. The rain was still coming down. The driver was tapping Johnny's shoulder and pointing to the road ahead. Johnny sat up. Somebody had hacked some vines and made a sign on the road. It was an arrow. From the clean cuts, it appeared to have been done with a claymore or a bayonet. Cyclos would have shot the vines in two. So it was their own people. They'd left them a sign. It was pointing to a roadside rest hut. There was a clatter of weapons in the back as his crew made ready in case they dismounted. Johnny pulled the rain cape around him, checked his belt gun, and picked up a mine lamp and his cane. The rain drizzled down his neck as he got out. The only thing different about the mine hut was evidence of recent foot traffic in front of it, and a door slightly ajar. Johnny pushed it open with his cane. The smell of human blood hit him. There was a scurry of something in there. Johnny drew his belt gun, but it was only a large rat that came charging out. The Scot was behind him with an assault rifle. Two Russians were coming up. Johnny flooded the mine lamp light into the place. There was something lying against the far wall. He could not make it out for a moment and stepped forward to find he was walking in blood. He turned the mine lamp fully on the object. He went closer. It was hard to tell what it was beyond a mangle of shredded flesh. Then he saw a piece of cloth, part of a kilt. It was Allison. The Scot and the Russians stood petrified. A closer examination showed that every artery and major vein had been left unsevered. Careful cyclo claws had ripped away the flesh around them, slice by slice. The whole body had been shredded in such a fashion. It must have taken hours for him to die. They had left the throat and jaws until last, and much of them still remained. Interrogation, cyclo style. There was something in the remains of the hand. A sharp-edged tool cyclos often carried in their pockets to clean motor points. A major artery on the inside of the leg was parted. Allison had effected his own death. He must have seized the tool from an unguarded pocket and finished himself. Could they have rescued him? Not in this forest and on this road, Johnny thought, sadly. The cyclos must have started his torture at the compound and finished it here when they feared he might be dying, and they would have learned nothing of any help for their own convoy. Allison had not even known of their own expedition. Ah, but Allison possibly could have told them the numbers and disposition of bases the humans now had. And Allison had probably talked, for there are limits to human endurance. No. The remaining teeth were chipped with grinding. The jaws seemed to be frozen shut. Possibly Allison had not talked. But it didn't matter whether he had talked or not. The convoy was doomed. It was doomed in the narrowed eyes of the Russians. It was doomed in the angry clench of the Scot's fist on a claymore. After a little, the Scot went out and got a tarp and laid it gently over the mess that had been Allison. The Scot said,
"We'll be back for you, laddie. With blood on our blades. Never fear."
Johnny walked back out into the rain. It came to him suddenly that the Brigantes now had a blood feud with Scotland. The cyclos? He was not too sure he wanted them alive now. And he had to make himself be very rational about it.